Consumer Focus with Martin Newman.
Hello and welcome to Consumer Focus, bringing you expert advice and opinions on customer service and the Great British High Street. My name is Martin Newman, and having worked in commerce for over 35 years, I am dedicated to championing the consumer and helping businesses to develop the best strategies for their customers. Today, I have the privilege of being joined by Adam Zainuddin. Adam is a marine biologist who has studied previously at Heriot Watt University and also the University of Glasgow. He specialises in investigating how plastics from items such as consumer goods and others damage wildlife. Adam has visited, lived and studied in several continents, including Asia, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Canada and parts of the US and the UK. And he's experienced a diversity of culture, people, opinions, concerns and challenges. Adam's main passion is the environment, and he says that he is committed to making a positive difference for future generations. Adam, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. First thing I'd like to ask you is, what first drew you towards marine biology and animal biology? What was it? What was the attraction?
I think the attraction just started from primary school. You know, when you go to school, the teachers, when they're supportive, it just develops that love of something. And I had teachers who would just always inspire a love for sciences. I had teachers who would sit there and encourage me to go to the science club after school.
Was that a particular focus of the school that you went to, or was it literally just their passion?
It was the focus of the teacher that I had.
Right.
Well, the two teachers that I had, where one was in charge of the science club and was looking for students to kind of take up a new initiative in the school called the Young Environmentalists, where they would send students off to the National Environmental Agency to kind of learn the skills to present, to do presentations, but also to bring forth the news, then the initiatives that they created for primary schools and bring them to the students.
Right.
And so they just inspired so much love for the sciences. And I grew up basically in a world where on TV you would have all these documentaries up, you would have all the, you know, Bill Nye was always on TV and he would just inspire loads of scientists. I'm sure a lot of people you ask now will say, oh yeah, I remember Bill Nye inspired me and made me love sciences and made science cool. That was the same for me, especially with the teachers who just kept saying, do the sciences, learn the sciences, and then I just fell in love with the sciences.
Well, that's great, isn't it? I mean, it's great to go to a school and have teachers who are as passionate about something, and particularly something as important as, you know, the environment and where that's led you. So, I mean, that's great. Rather than just turning up at school for the sake of turning up at school, you know.
Yeah, you go to school to learn and just to develop yourselves.
Exactly.
And then they just said, you know, they're just more than just the basic biology, physics and chemistry.
Yeah.
There's more to it. And so because of them, I learned about animal biology, did that, and fell in love with marine biology, and so did that as well.
Fantastic. Tell me, you've lived in many countries, and you've obviously experienced many cultures. Have you been anywhere with noticeable measures in place to maintain an environmentally sustainable high street?
In all the countries that I've lived in, they've all got their own initiatives in place.
Mm-hmm.
All of them have different ways of being environmentally sustainable and being environmentally friendly.
Mm-hmm. Presumably to different levels as well.
Yeah, to different levels and in different ways, because it's you know, it's not of are you environmentally friendly, are you not environmentally friendly? It's more of shades of grey.
Yeah.
It's you're environmentally friendly to a certain level. So, you know, in Asia, there were loads of places where they've introduced the recycling bins.
Yeah.
They've introduced plastics that, you know, new plastic bottles that are made from old plastic bottles. And not just plastics, but resources as well. Especially in Singapore, there was the new water treatment facility where it takes water and they process it, as it were, to make it drinkable.
Mm-hmm.
When I lived in the Netherlands, you know, that was the first country that I was introduced to reusable bags, where you would buy a bag for life and use it all the time, and the car was filled with at least four bags that we just use at supermarkets. Living in New Zealand, that was the first time that I saw that instead of just the bin trucks coming and take, you know, the rubbish away, they would also be recycling.
Yep.
So they have recycling boxes. You fill up the recycling and you put it out and they'll clear it. And so here as well in the UK, the initiatives have also been to the point where, you know, there's recycling bins, there's dry recycling, there's, you know, there's bottles, there's glass. And there's also initiatives in terms of foodstuffs, where they put, you know, discounted, which I know it's everywhere now, but this was the first place where I saw products that were, that had its own aisle, where I would walk down, you know, Tesco or Asda and see that there was an entire aisle dedicated to, you know, food that was about to go off or that were supposed to be in on the day itself. So I mean, every country has that level of environment friendliness.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of not classifying them as yes or no, but more of a rating from 1 to 10.
And what just on that note, what's your instinct in terms of what, which countries are the ones, you know, the one or two that you felt were doing the most? And you can include your home country in that.
Of course. It's hard to say because, you know, each country has their own speed at which they are trying to kind of keep up with today's world. In terms of, you know, being friendly. And it's just a matter of making sure that they are doing enough so that at that point in time, they're able to say, okay, we're doing this initiative, the next plan is this, to a speed where they are not being left behind and they're not doing something that's detrimental to the environment. Because that's really important, because a lot of people are saying, you know, some governments are not doing as much as they should. But, you know, in my lifetime, some have gone to great lengths. It's just a matter of picking up the speed a bit.
What more can stores do you think, to cut back on the amount of plastics they use?
Packaging, I think that's one of the most important things. Because a lot of, especially fruits, you know, a lot of stores that sell fruits, they sometimes put into plastic packaging where, you know, it's a whole bunch of fruits in plastic packet.
Exactly.
And in New Zealand as well, when you're buying bananas, for example, they're not in plastic packaging. They're just kind of open in that sense. And so that's, you know, that's a very important initiative to start, where the packaging should be changed, especially the article that I shared on LinkedIn, where it talked about supermarkets that are trying to change the packaging and the products. And one of the products was the, especially with Christmas coming up, it was the Christmas crackers that I think it was Waitrose that were trying to remove the plastic toys within those. And so a lot of people were commenting that it was great, but the packaging they were using, you know, it was the amount of plastic in it was countering the change of removing
the
plastic toys.
But
in my view, you know, I did see that, but I also saw it as a huge change in terms of
It's a step in the right direction.
Because it's it's especially in Western culture where I didn't have Christmas crackers living in other country, but coming here when I had Christmas with my friend, that was when I was first introduced to Christmas crackers and toys in them. And to see that it's been removed, it's a huge development to me, because it feels as if those toys are something people look forward to, and to remove them is a huge step.
I think that's, you know,
people are moving on and people are trying to.
I think that's a really good point, actually.
Yeah.
I know a lot of supermarkets are looking at ways of removing packaging and going back to, you know, loose produce, particularly in fruit and vegetables in the UK. I've seen some supermarkets in Asia do this quite effectively, where they've been using they've been using banana leaves to basically wrap the loose produce in. Are you, is that something you've seen, and do you think that's a positive move?
I have seen it in several supermarkets in Asia where they use kind of natural resources to wrap the fruits and veg. And also some of the other products as well to kind of keep it contained. And it's a nice initiative, because especially since they're using resources that are not, that are readily available but don't have a use yet. Because the only other use I've seen of banana leaf is to, one, use it in several dishes back home to wrap it and steam it and to kind of contain the flavor. And another is used in several restaurants to use in substitute of plates, where you have the banana leaf there and you eat from the banana leaf, which is also, you know, reducing the amount of water being used to wash the plates and the waste. And
I definitely feel we're going to be doing a lot more of that, you know, repurposing or finding other purposes for, you know, natural produce that we already
have. Yeah, because that's so useful when you're able to, because the banana tree is there. You've got the fruit, which you enjoy, and you can have a purpose for the leaves now. We can use it as wrapping, you can use it as a plate. And I've seen articles where people are using cutlery that is edible, and that's using resources as well that, you know, that's not normally used for that purpose. So to have supermarkets starting to get into the groove of using natural resources, of using banana leaves to cover the fruits and veg, is fantastic because it's using stuff that we would not normally use.
Mm. Tell me, do you think that the changes in the way that we use single-use plastics need to be top-down? What I mean by that is stores deciding to get rid of plastic packaging, or do you think that it starts with the individual consumer and the choices that we make as consumers?
I believe it works both ways, that, you know, if stores are willing to offer an option for, you know, would you like a plastic bag, then it's up to the consumer to say yes or no. A lot of people, especially my parents, they walk around with the reusable bag, but it's foldable into a tiny...
Yeah, the kind of bag for life types.
Kind of a bag for life, but it's you can fold it up into a small package and just essentially bring it around.
Mm.
And so, you know, to answer that question, it's both ways. It's, you know, some stores can choose to get rid of the plastic packaging, but it is up to them whether it is part of the imperative of the store, whether it is possible for them to do that.
Mm.
If it's impossible for them to do that, then they should find a way to say, okay, less plastic bags, or have a way so that people can have a plastic bag option that is like a bag for life.
What's the biggest problem in your mind with the approach stores have to plastics? What's the biggest misconception?
I think the biggest problem with plastics is that, you know, there is a problem of a lot of the plastic packaging. The plastic bags is, you know, some people see it as convenient, especially if they've forgotten the bag for life, or if it's more convenient to have a plastic bag, as some people do reuse the plastic bags for other purposes. But I think, you know, the main problem is just to reduce the use of plastics in the packaging, in the items such as the multi-pack of bananas, to have it open air, and also in the packaging of the seasonal items.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the example of the Christmas crackers, they were back in plastic boxes. So to have a way so that people can buy the products and have a way that less plastics are being used in the packaging, because I think the packaging is where all the plastics are being, majority of the plastics are being used in.
Mm.
So plastic packaging, plastic labels and all that.
Yeah.
To find a way to reduce that will start a whole chain of events where it would trickle down from the packaging to possibly the product itself, in terms of the components that it's made up of, and then trickling down to the consumer and have them being able to use an alternative, bags for life, for example.
Yeah. The next thing is about the commercial impact or the financial benefit of having an impact on, you know, from looking at packaging from an environmental perspective, from a retailer's perspective or a brand's perspective. And my instinct is that, you know, as somebody who's worked in retail for 30 odd years, that for a lot of retailers, I don't think there will be necessarily an immediate financial benefit for considering environmental sustainability, both in their products and their packaging. So what would you say the incentive to retailers is to either cut down on microplastics, stop using palm oil, or reduce single plastic? For example, there's just three scenarios. What would you say is the commercial sort of benefit or incentive for retailers to start on that path?
The main one that comes to mind would be the public eye. So especially in a world where the media is essentially so important to us that we'll read the news online and the news is so readily available to us, that an opinion of someone or opinion of a brand or opinion of a group of individuals could be shaped by one person. And especially looking at the comments for the post that I shared, a lot of people were saying, okay, that's great on Waitrose that he did this, but, and there's always, you know, someone will always have an opinion, and that reflects on the company itself.
Mm.
So if a company decides to do something really, really environmentally friendly, mm-hmm. that it's amazing, it's fantastic, it's something brand new no one's ever thought of, that would have a positive opinion from the mm-hmm. from the everyday person. And so that will cause them to possibly go to that store to consume the products from there. And it will just be a basic economic growth, where it's, you know, people will demand more products from that store because they're doing such great things, or somebody has heard they're doing great things.
Yeah.
And so that certain facility will
say,
okay.
There's a driver for it, basically.
Yeah, there's a drive for them to just continue to support and continue to gain that positive view from the public.
I think there's a whole piece for me around authenticity and purpose. And I think that consumers, I personally believe that as a consumer myself, I think consumers are forgiving of a business for not necessarily doing everything they expect them to be doing, as long as they know they're trying and they're on a journey and that they're open about it and they're authentic and they're transparent.
Yeah, because I think that's one of the main things that people look for, that if a store brand decides that they're going to have a roadmap of what their aim is. So their aim is to, you know, remove plastic packaging of certain products. If people are aware of that, then they'll know that there's a goal that's worth striving towards, then that would have a positive impact on the consumer and also the side of the retailers.
Exactly. I mean, one of the brands that comes to mind for me is Patagonia, the outdoor retailer in the States. You often go onto their website and instead of there being a homepage pushing products to buy, whether that's fishing rods, hiking boots, tents, or whatever it happens to be, you see a picture of the ocean and a message around protecting fish. And I think that's massively powerful, you know, because there's a brand that doesn't actually, it's actually saying, you know what we sell. We don't have to push all those products on the homepage.
Of course, yeah.
We are going to use that real estate on our website to actually, you know, demonstrate our purpose and what we really care about. And I really think that resonates. And in fact, I mean, I know that in the latest poll in the US, they're the third most trusted and respected brand in the US. So it clearly, you know, that has a commercial benefit. And that's the thing, I often think the way that retailers and brands look at this stuff is they look at it too clinically in terms of the ROI. They look at an individual situation like, you know, packaging for loose products and go, we can't make this work. Right, financially, what they're not looking at is the bigger picture. What they're not looking at is the customer engagement piece and how it makes consumers feel about their brand and what that does to what you were talking about a minute ago about giving consumers reasons to want to continue to go back to that store.
Yeah, because it's all about the consumers, because it's the retailers. If they don't have people coming in to the store, then
they have no business.
Yeah, they have no business. So in order to bring them back, it's all about the image, which is very important.
Exactly. As for the stores that claim a need to use plastic, and there are still some that do that, perhaps due to the high costs of using alternative materials, what message would you want to send to them about disposing of plastics?
I've seen several companies where they produce products that use plastic packaging.
Yeah.
And then they've developed their own initiative where they've said, okay, if they'll go to the recycling plant, take the recycled plastic and use that to manufacture new products or new product packaging.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the products, when you read the back, it'll say made from reused plastic bottles. And so the message would be to develop initiatives that are focused on making sure that there is a kind of a cycle of the waste products mm-hmm. back into the industry. Where if, let's say, it's a company that's producing plastic drinks in plastic bottles, they have an initiative to take the plastic bottles from the recycling plant, from consumers essentially, bring it back to the manufacturing plant, break them down into small pieces and produce new bottles from them and have it so that, you know, if you bring, I know there's some places where if you bring a bottle to them, you get an incentive.
Yes,
you get a little
incentive, yeah.
Yeah, and that is something that's very heartening to see as, you know, as an animal and marine biologist, if I see that there's work and an incentive to make sure that the environment's kept clean, that, you know, no more new bottles are being produced, that it's all being from old bottles, then it's heartening, because it's something that will always, something that will stay, something that will just keep going.
Sure.
And it'll make sure that people remember that.
Yeah.
That, you know, these, that this, that they'll use, keep using the same bottles over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
And
definitely. Well, I think, and it's a very compelling proposition for consumers, right, to be engaging with a brand that's doing that, right? Particularly if they are proactively finding ways of getting those plastics back from the consumer, whether that's incentivizing, as you said, for bottles, or whether it's finding another path and encouraging their customers, you know, to make sure that that plastic gets back into to them directly as a brand, ideally, or obviously into some form of recycling. What environmental initiatives do you think more retailers should be involved with, both in the UK and around the world?
It's very much the same of, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle. Mm. That is the main thing that I always think of when a company will say, oh,
we... 3 R's, reduce, reuse and recycle.
If we can't do this, you know, we'll have to... Those are basically the main structure, kind of the baseline, the cement of the house that you're building. That has to be the foundation. If you follow from there and you develop ways to add on to initiatives, new initiatives from there, that is what you have to think about, which goes back to, you know, if retailers are reducing the amount of plastics they're using, that's great. If they're reusing the packaging that they've been using, that's great. You know, a lot of, I know some companies are doing their bit towards new resources, kind of, especially back home in Singapore, where they're doing a lot of initiatives with the new water. That's a very important thing, because water is scarce.
Sure is.
Like drinkable water is, you know, a lot of us are able to have it. There are places that can't have it. And so to have that new water system, perfecting it and being able to have that elsewhere is going to help so much people, so many people around the world. And so, you know, there's a whole bunch of, I know there are a lot of initiatives everywhere. You know, people could spend hours listing 10% of them. But I think the main thing that retailers should start being involved with, or continue to be involved with, is initiatives where they are able to reduce the impact that they have environmentally, or find ways where they are able to assist others in reducing the impact. Because I know there will be a lot of places that aren't able to, but if they have support, then it starts a whole discussion and it starts a whole...
I agree, but I also think it's something that, you know, retailers and other consumer-facing businesses, you know, need to do within their own community, within the broader community, also encouraging their own colleagues, their employees, to be socially responsible and to be recycling and to be, you know, to have and to support them on that journey as well, because that helps to drive change, consumer change at the end of the day, because, you know, you could be a business with 10, 50, 100,000 employees who are all consuming an awful lot of packaged goods and whatever else, and fresh fruit and everything else, and the plastic that goes with it. And if you can get them bought in and into the process and into the impact that this can have, and the part they can play outside of the business, as well as when they're working in the business.
Yeah, because it all starts with one person, isn't it? Yeah. It just has the one person to start the whole initiative, and then they tell their friend, they tell another friend, and they tell another friend, and it just trickles down to the point where 100,000 people are telling 200,000 people.
You get a groundswell, don't you? Just on that note, so a nice segue on, to what extent have consumer trends over the last decade made a positive or negative impact to the future in terms of the environment? In other words, is there hope?
I believe there is hope. It's just a matter of the speed at which several governments have to start the legislation in our, in terms of the environment. I actually looked up a something that I read ages ago, because when I was growing up, I was using products that had the, I think they call it microbeads, so kind of like microplastics in them. And so I stopped using them a while back because I read an article that they were harmful to the environment. And then when I double-checked, the legislation that I thought that had been put in when I was growing up was only recently put up. So, you know, there's a, I think, a 4-year gap between when I read the article that microbeads were bad, leading up to microbeads being banned, I think, in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the speed at which the developments of laws and changes in produce. Mm-hmm. The speed at which they're changing is, you know, I'm happy with it, but at the same time, I believe it could be a lot faster.
Absolutely.
Especially in my life, like lifespan. Yeah. I'm 25. Yeah. I have seen so many changes. Mm-hmm. I've seen changes in food packaging. I've seen changes in the components of the products we've used, and face wash and beauty products, and even the food we changes in that in terms of how it's grown, what chemicals are being used in them, you know, how they're being grown. Those changes I've seen throughout my life, I'm happy with them, but I mean, you can tell that there's a tone in my voice that there is so much more that can be done.
Oh, totally.
But I believe it's just more of the investigation and getting the data right, because you know, you don't want to have an entire law put in to find out that it's, in 20 years' time, it's detrimental. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I believe that, you know, the laws are being put in, they're helping. It's just, you know, it needs to be picked up faster.
Sure. Well, you're the generation to do it, right? So millennials and Gen Zers are going to drive the future for the planet at the end of the day. You're, you know, it's very much your generation, and you know, and even young, you know, younger than you, obviously, Greta Thunberg, who's obviously been leading the whole climate change movement with the school kids around the world. I mean, it's been quite amazing the impact that she's had. And
yeah, so many articles about her and what she's done.
The momentum that's created has been quite phenomenal. Adam, I could talk about this stuff all day long because I'm quite passionate about it and you're much more knowledgeable about it. So I've learned quite a lot today, and that means that hopefully so have our listeners. So thank you so much for joining me. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for. Thank you to all of you for listening to Consumer Focus with me, Martin Newman, and my wonderful guest, Adam Zainuddin. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation. Please leave it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it, as that helps others to find us. I hope you'll join me next time to discuss the latest in consumer concerns. Thank you very much.